You're listening to the Million Dollar Sellers Podcast with your host, Nick Schuchat. Today's show features another amazing entrepreneur who has found success online. Now, let's learn what it takes to be a million dollar seller. All right, welcome to the Million Dollar Sellers Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Schuchat, and today we have Brandon on the call. Super excited to have you on here, man. Why don't you let the listeners know where you're at today, where you're calling in from?
So I'm calling in from Long Island, New York.
Nice. So how long have you been in New York?
So I grew up in New Jersey, and then I moved in with my wife in the city in Manhattan, East Village, for a while. And then, what, about 3 years ago, after we had our first baby, we moved out here, and we've been here ever since.
Cool, man. How's life in New York treating you during these interesting times?
It's okay. I'm happy. We bought a house in August, so I'm happy, or September. I'm happy to finally be in a place with more space. That's for sure. I can't imagine being in like that small apartment in Manhattan during all this, but it's been fine though.
So do you work from home? You got an office? How you doing that?
I do a little bit of both. So I have an office at home that I work out of the basement. And then I have my own office in a co-working space a few towns over that I actually share with another MDS member. We just kind of go in occasionally, probably both of us. We say we both have an office, but we're rarely there together at the same time. But we go in, you know, once or twice a week, I guess I would say.
Okay. Cool, man. So is Amazon like your first thing as an entrepreneur? Did you try anything else before that?
I've been doing entrepreneurial stuff for quite a while. So I guess I'll start by saying I had my first website like in the early mid 90s, and with a friend of mine in high school. And it was an NCSA Mosaic cool site of the day, which is like really dating us, me quite a bit. And that was probably the first, you know, time I tried to start something. And it did pretty well, but we were in high school, so we really didn't do anything with it. So we probably could have like done a lot more with it and cashed out in the dot-com boom, but I was kind of concerned with other things. And after graduating, I tried to start another company that was basically Seamless or Grubhub, but like way, 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 way early. And that just had no shot of working out. There weren't even cell phones then, like people used for anything like that. Like it was just way too early. And then I started an e-commerce site selling oil paintings, which is my first e-commerce site. And it did okay. And I had ran that for a couple of years, and I was basically beating my head against the wall trying to make that work. And the reason why I picked oil paintings was because I had them made to order, so I didn't have to pay for any inventory or order anything from companies or drop ship or do anything like that. And this was in, the mid 2000s, and there was no Shopify set up, and it was still pretty early for that kind of thing. But it was really hard. And, one day I went to a meeting, where I, in the city, where a bunch of other companies were there that, you know, big galleries that were selling paintings or selling all kinds of things online. And the person who was talking about e-commerce in the art space, and they were like, okay, raise your hand if you sold $100 online. And like some hands went up, and then they were like, raise your hands if you sold $1,000 online. And me and like four hands went up, and I was like, all right, I got to get out of this. Like, because it was like people from like literally like the top galleries in the world, people who had like, you know, so much money at their disposal versus like, you know, 20 something year old me in my, you know, room, like working. It was just like, well, if they can't make it work, then there's just no way I'm going to be able to make this work for myself. So I went to law school at that period, and I passed the bar, but I never practiced because during law school, I started selling my books on Amazon, and I realized there was something to this whole Amazon thing. And, you know, fast forward a few years later, I started my Amazon business, and here I am today.
Wow. I had no idea you went to school to be a lawyer. I didn't know that.
I passed the bar in New York and New Jersey too.
Wow. That's intense, man. So that's pretty cool, man. It's a good journey where like you tried a bunch of different, you tried a few different things and, kind of stumbled into Amazon, it sounds like, which I think is super cool. I feel like I was kind of like forced into entrepreneurship. Right. And And I kind of got lucky with like finding eBay and Amazon, and didn't really try too much before that. I had like a landscaping thing that I was doing, but I love hearing the story of just like trying and trying and trying, and you know, you enter all these challenges, but you just keep pushing through, right? Like that's the critical factor to success as an entrepreneur, right? Like just don't freaking give up, and something will work out. Do you feel like you were
I'd say yes and no. I feel like I probably, from my art oil painting business, I should have given up much earlier.
but
definitely keep trying, but don't be afraid to pull the plug if it's just not working.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Don't be afraid to pivot, for sure. Where do you feel like that kind of drive came from to be an entrepreneur? I mean, did you feel that way like as a kid, that you were like determined to do something big, or was your family doing their own type of thing? What motivated you to chase that?
I don't know. I think that, my dad was a lawyer and he was in business for himself, and his dad was an accountant and he was in business for himself. And so I think I kind of saw like no one in my family. And even on my mom's side, my grandfather was a sales rep for like a mattress company. So he was kind of always out and about doing his own thing. So I never really, like, I guess modeling growing up, saw like either my parents or grandparents in any capacity, like working a 9-to-5 job continuously for someone else. So I don't know if there was ever like a point where I was like, I'm dying to be an entrepreneur, but I think it was kind of built into me a little bit. And, you know, I cut out a little bit of my journey, but I had some jobs in there. And there were points where I'm like, I was like, okay, this is fun. This is good. I can do this. And then it was like, but forever, like,
right.
and I remember I after I graduated college, I lived in London for 6 months, and that was probably like the longest that I actually worked anywhere, just because, you know, when you're in school, you're working for a few months here, a few months there. And when I was in London, I was working for 6 months straight. And I remember, like, you know, towards the end of my time there, I was just like, I can't believe people do this like forever. Like, it's really, you know, it's hard. I think maybe that was more of the germination than anything else.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of how like I always felt too growing up. Like, man, I cannot do this forever, you know, like requesting time off, and, you know, like one day I'm going to have kids and I'm going to want to spend time with them. And like, you know, what if it's my son's birthday? Like, and I have to go to work. Like, I don't want to. And if I do have to go to work, at least it's me making the decision, right? Like,
exactly.
You know, hey, son, I got to go into work today. Why don't you come in with me and, like, you know, see what dad does or something like that.
Right.
But yeah, the idea of working for someone else forever definitely, you know, pushed me to try different things and kind of rebel against school and things like that, man. I kind of got out of school pretty early. So, I mean, how do you feel about like where you are now in that sense? Like, you feel pretty good that you've like taken control of your business. Obviously, you've been successful selling on Amazon, doing over $1 million in revenue. What's life look like for Brandon right now?
Yeah, it's pretty good. You know, I'm kind of at a point now where I a little bit of a crossroads where I need to figure out how I want to grow or what my next move is. I think as you keep growing, there's always different challenges ahead. And I'm kind of feel like I'm at a little bit of that pivot point right now where, you know, when I was, you know, selling a lot less, it was easier to manage more myself or with a smaller team. And now that as I keep growing, it's getting harder to do that. And it's taking too much of my time to do things that, you know, don't really bring money into the business. So it's kind of what I've been trying to focus on fixing a little bit.
So what are some different things you're thinking about doing? What are these other pivots you're looking at?
Well, it's really just like, you know, so much. I mean, I sell in Europe, I sell in Canada, I obviously sell in the United States, Mexico, and with Brexit and just a lot of the, you know, compliance issues that have kind of cropped up over the last year, I feel like a lot of my time has been just spent dealing with that and dealing with figuring out like how we're importing goods into UK, or dealing with the responsible person rule in Europe, or just a lot of minutia that, you know, they're all, nothing's too crazy where it's like, oh, that's nothing, but everything requires like a bit of time and is important because you're dealing with government entities. So it kind of has been sapping a lot of my output over the last few months, for sure.
Yeah. I imagine some of that stuff probably would be difficult to outsource, right? Like, especially dealing with those government authorities, like you want to get exactly. that stuff right.
Exactly.
You feel like it's been worth it though, you know, selling on these other marketplaces, like are the numbers
making
you feel good about it?
I wouldn't do it if I didn't think it was worth it. And as much as I complain about the laws and the new regulations in Europe for a lot of things, I think it's amazingly helpful in that it cleans up the marketplace and makes it so there's less fly-by-night sellers, less scammers, less people selling counterfeits. And it also creates a bit of a barrier to entry because it's a lot more expensive to get started there now than it was years ago. So for me, like, while it's challenging and difficult and annoying, you know, once I'm out the other side, it's going to be a lot easier because there's going to be a lot less competition. And it's going to be a lot easier to grow.
Yeah. And hopefully, I imagine, I haven't dealt with a bunch of like the other government organizational stuff like you are, but I imagine as you're able to take a step back from some of this stuff, like you might be able to outsource some of that stuff, right? And plug someone else into it.
You would think, but I mean, it's yes and no. It's just, there's a lot of, you know, like you don't do anything. And then it's like, hey, we need these six documents now. And then you've got to like dig into your tax returns or dig in for some kind of certificate from the state of New York showing that you're okay as an entity and things like that, where it's not necessarily easy to outsource because it's like you need to like request the right document from the state authority and then scan it and then sign it and fax it. And it's just, there's a lot of little stupid steps, but I'm hopeful to kind of pull out the side. But the point of a lot of it is saying that, you know, I understand I need to be doing it. It's hard to outsource, but it doesn't mean necessarily that like our marketing should suffer or anything else should suffer because I have to handle all that right now.
Right. Did Amazon help you get with any of that global expansion? I know they have those programs where like the people from Amazon Global will reach out to you and they'll kind of help with some things.
Did
you go that route?
So I would say along the way they had, but you know, I've been selling in Europe for a while now. So it's not like I've just started selling. I've been selling for 4 or 5 years now. Okay. But really in terms of Brexit and the new rules and restrictions in place, I would say they did the exact opposite of help. They only made things harder, more difficult, more complicated. But you know, it is what it is.
Right. And I'm assuming the US is still probably a majority of your sales, like probably significantly, if I was going to guess.
It's definitely the majority. Significantly, I'm not so sure about it. I mean, my between Europe and Canada, and every year for me, my Europe and Canada stuff keeps growing against the US stuff. So at this point, it's not evenly split, but it's getting closer and closer to that.
Nice. Well, yeah, that's definitely exciting.
Yeah.
Seems like it's still kind of, like you mentioned, like it's just less competitive, less fly-by-night sellers. A little harder, bigger barrier of entry to get in there.
Exactly.
I got on the UK stuff, man. I had someone from Amazon get in touch with me a while ago and, you know, they connected me with like Flexport and helped me get set up with VAT and stuff like that. But I kind of dropped the ball and didn't really follow through with it. I think they still send me, I still get letters from what's the
HMRC.
Oh, HMRC. Yeah. Yeah, they're still hitting me with letters and stuff. I probably should take care of that.
Yeah, they don't quit. I've been under audit for what's now 27 months.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. They don't quit.
Okay. Geez. Yeah. So like what, like a tax audit?
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound any fun.
No, but that's another one of those things where I'm just like, I need to produce documents or find data for them or something. And, you know, it's difficult because especially with the pandemic, there's not like one person assigned to your case. It's like a team of people. And those team of people just kind of rotate based on various things. So a lot of times it's explaining the same things to different people that you've explained before or clarifying things or having them understand things. And like, they don't really understand e-commerce. So like we had like a determination, which I guess is like their preview of what it could possibly be that I would owe. And like one of the things on there was they were saying that you owe X amount of money for not paying VAT on these orders. And me having to explain to them that those were all replacement items that I sent out. And then that, you know, we didn't collect VAT because we didn't collect money. So we didn't pay money on that. So, and we don't have to. And then they had to have me go back and they selected like 20 different orders. And I had to go find the conversations with each of the people where I'm explaining to them that I'm sending them a replacement item.
Oh, wow, man, that's intense.
And that's just like a piece of what it is. So, okay. Yeah.
Well, what's some of the more exciting stuff that you do in your business? Like, what do you really enjoy doing in the Amazon business?
So I like a few things. I love picking out new products. I like doing the research and trying to find like a little niche inside of the broader niche. I sell kitchenware, so it's pretty competitive. There's just tons of different options on there. So I love looking and digging in and trying to find those little niches and creating a product around them and creating the page and like marketing the page towards that. Other than that, you know, I generally enjoy just running the business in general outside of all of that compliance stuff. Pulling the levers on marketing, pulling the levers on sales and trying to make things grow. I generally enjoy that. I get a thrill sometimes. I look at the order page and see orders coming through for a new product like that I just put on. So yeah, there's a lot that I really enjoy.
Nice, man. So what's your team look like? Do you have some virtual assistants, anybody locally?
So I guess I have a bunch of people right now. So I have a sourcing agent in China. That I use. She's not exclusive to me, but they handle all the sourcing needs that I have. And then in the Philippines, I have a VA who handles a lot of the like order processing, let's say off of Shopify or Fair or Wayfair. We sell in Walmart, and just we sell in a bunch of marketplaces and kind of making sure those all run smoothly. A lot of that's automated, but some of it is like just needs like a manual touch and doing customer service. And then I have another VA, which I've recently hired, who handles with like tracking shipments and creating labels and keeping track of cost of goods. And just keeping things orderly so we make sure that we're tracking what we're doing, what we're ordering, and keeping good numbers and good tabs on what we're doing. I've got a bookkeeper. I have an accountant, which obviously everyone pretty much has. And then I have two PPC agencies that I use, one for the US and then one for Europe.
Okay.
And I think that's everybody. Yeah.
Nice. So yeah, you definitely got a good sized team, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting. I enjoy seeing those orders come in too, man, especially when you get something new and it works out and you find like you realize that you found that exciting niche. And it's kind of cool because I get to see that with doing the brand management stuff where, you know, we bring on a new brand and it's like a completely different niche that, I didn't even really know about or something like that. And you start to see like what type of people are buying these products. I like to look at that frequently bought together section and you can kind of start to discover like, oh, wow, you know, these people that do like lawn treatment are using this product. And I never even expected that, you know, lawn treatment guys would use this product or something like that. Amazon reveals like some pretty interesting things about people and what they're looking for and what they're buying. Have you come across like anything really weird that like sticks out to you or you're just like, oh man, I can't believe, you know, that's going on right now or that they're buying this product or using it for this reason?
Yeah, all the time with our products. You know, some of our products have, especially during the pandemic, have been like repurposed as like mask holders or things like that. You know, we've gotten a lot of, you know, customer when they, you know, reviews or support issues where they're using our product. And I'm like, well, why would you use it like that? And like, of course it's going to break or something like that. Or there's always something. You know, one woman complained that our product broke and then she wouldn't be able to take care of her special needs parrot. And like, I didn't even know such a thing existed. You know, the things every day come across that I'm surprised that they're being used for, or even in a lot of ways, also surprised that people find utility for. You know, some products that I thought looked nice, people will chime in and just in write and be like, I'm so glad you made this product because it helps me because I have Parkinson's or I have some other some condition and your product is the only one that I found that I can use or something like that. So like there's always amazing ways that people find to use products that I have never thought of, at least when I was designing them or picking them.
Nice. Yeah, that's exciting that, you know, it feels good to like create products that, you know, make someone's life better. Like that's
exactly.
Do you think that's like a big part of what you enjoy doing in the business as well? Like finding that niche where you can really provide something that people need?
Yeah. Really providing something unique. It's easy to look at Amazon and think that like you can't, because there's just so much out there, but there's really so many product variations and so many ideas that can exist and that you can come up with, or even products that maybe the person who launched them on Amazon just failed at it. But it's still a great product, and trying again with, you know, my marketing, can make that become a big product. So that kind of thing happens all the time. I really do enjoy that aspect of it for sure.
Yeah. And you know, you said something, it makes me think about like how the landscape of Amazon is changing right now. And I think a lot of guys like us who have been in it for a while, we've like, you know, we see people say like, oh, it's getting competitive. But like, in my opinion, it really is just now starting to get competitive, where you see these really big companies starting to get, starting to play the game, like people with some really, really deep pockets.
Yeah.
And now I am starting to get actually a little concerned. Like it's not just, you know, mom down the street that started reselling on Amazon. It's like some multi-billion-dollar company that just bought 10 businesses and
exactly,
you know, now they're your competitor. So like, did you kind of think that way before? Like, oh man, it's getting competitive. I mean, it's gotten harder, right? Like it's gotten harder to launch a product, but what's your opinion on kind of the landscape of Amazon now?
So what I would say is like, I don't think it deters me at all. So I would say three or four years ago, one of the big companies, they're still out there. I'm not going to say they are, but they're still out there, and they've become this massive company, and they were pretty big back then. But they copied one of my products exactly.
Wow.
And I was really angry, and they were charging a lot less for it, to the point where they're making almost no profit margin on it. They were just trying to churn sales, basically, probably to inflate their numbers for their investors or what have you. And it was really tough. And I went in there and I started advertising on their listing and advertising heavy on their listing. And I started taking all their customers. And there was a point where I looked and it was like I was taking about 120 to 150 sales a month just advertising on their listing with my exact same product that cost double the price, to a point where they ended up discontinuing the product because they couldn't make it work.
Wow.
And I won. Not to say that's going to happen all the time, but when that happened, it made me a lot less scared of bigger players in the space trying to put muscle behind products that maybe will compete with me.
Yeah, that's cool, man. So you said you had a higher price product. You're doing some product targeting ad on their listing. What do you think like grabbed the consumer's attention? Was it the title? Was it the image? Was it what do you think it was?
There were a few things. The title was better. The image was better. Reviews were a lot better. One of the big mistakes that they made was there are two versions of the product, and they took the version that breaks more often. And had they read the reviews of my product, which they apparently didn't, they would have not done that, because I did that at first and I switched very quickly. And so their reviews kind of didn't really take off as well as mine did. But I already had a big head start in terms of number of reviews. I obviously had better review, you know, star rating, better title, better pictures, better copy. Right. So like in every regard, I thought I outperformed them, other than them being willing to charge a lot less for the product. Okay. And to be fair, I lowered my price a couple dollars back then too, just to make it a little more competitive, but I was still definitely much higher than they were.
Nice, man. I tell you what, I learned the lesson the hard way that having a lower price does not lead to more sales on Amazon.
Sometimes, not all the time. Yeah.
I got beat up on a product where, you know, I thought I could kind of bully my way in there by being the lowest price person, and it just didn't work out that way. It was in a pretty competitive niche too. So, you know, I definitely won't rely on that. I think it boils down to that marketing strategy, right? Like that launch strategy and getting yourself mm-hmm. in there that way and then maintaining that position. And from what I saw, the low price was not, it didn't really move the needle that much for me. So that's exciting to hear that you kind of had a similar experience where you were able to maintain a higher price.
Yeah.
And capture those customers still.
Yeah. Sometimes it definitely does matter. And something I try to look for in a niche is try to pick a niche where prices are kind of all over the map.
Okay.
So just, you know, some niches you'll look at and everything is, I don't know, $17.99 and or somewhere around there. And then obviously there's not much you can do price wise. But if you're picking a niche where, like, I don't know, the metal one is 24 and then the granite one is 58 and then, right. And they're just kind of all over the map. You have a lot of room to price yourself and to come up with a price based on the fact that people are willing to pay varying prices for varying kinds of units.
Nice. Yeah. Well, that's definitely a super good tip, man. I always try to keep like a list of things that we should look at when we're doing product mm-hmm. research. Cause I enjoy that part too. And we've got a pretty long list of stuff that we look at.
Yeah, me too.
And I have, like, we do look at like the different prices, but I guess I've never really given it that much thought of like, hey, you know, they're all over the place, man. So this is actually a good signal that the mm-hmm. price is all over the place.
Yeah. I have a column in our research sheet, just like price variability. And then like, okay. Obviously I'll dig in before we start ordering samples, but like, yeah, it's definitely a big piece that I look at.
Nice. Then are you managing that just like in a Google sheet, Excel yeah. sheet?
Yeah, I have a pretty intense process like to find products. And I look at, obviously, like you do, like a lot of different metrics to figure out what I want to sell and what I don't want to sell. And a lot of that was, before COVID hit, I used to go to the Canton Fair every year. And before you go, it really pays to have your research just done and knowing exactly what you're looking for. So a lot of it came out of preparing for that. But, you know, I ordered a bunch of samples this year and I didn't even do the research, you know, really, because I just kind of knew intuitively based on previous research what niches I wanted and what were good. And I couldn't go to the Canton Fair. So I just ordered a bunch of catalogs from my current suppliers and figured I'd just go that way. But like, Yeah. It's a pretty intricate process, I would say, for sure.
Did you ever do any sourcing on like Alibaba or any other?
In the very beginning, yeah. Yeah, in the very beginning.
So how do you think that compares to actually going over to China, getting to know them?
Between that and I have a sourcing agent now who also can help find products, between all of that, there's nothing that's even remotely comparable. It's so much better. I hated Alibaba. I hate using it. So I'm like overjoyed that it's something I don't have to do anymore, really.
Yeah, it seems like there's these guys, like they've got to be like kind of arbitraging Alibaba, right?
Yeah.
They're like sourcing it from someone else, like on 1688 or Alibaba.
Exactly. Yeah. And it makes it like, so, I mean, sometimes I'll do a little research on there if, let's say, there's a niche I'm looking into and get an idea for products, but I won't actually contact anyone. I'll forward it to my sourcing agent and then she'll figure out who to talk to and cut out all the middlemen and make it at all work. You know, it's definitely a benefit that she also is, I'm not her only client. So she works with other clients. So
yeah,
sometimes, you know, I'll refer her something and she'd be like, oh, I already deal with this factory for a different client. Let me talk to them. And then obviously there's a rapport, there's better pricing because they're already used to dealing with her. So it makes it easier to get things started a lot of times.
I've even seen a wide variety of pricing, like in brokers from the United States. You know, you reach out to them, they're like, yeah, we can source this for you. And then you reach out to like one other one and the prices are so like, in my experience, have been so different from two US based brokers. And like, it makes me think, I'm like, man, did this one guy just like put out an RFQ on Alibaba or something like that? Like,
yeah. You
know, I can do that. I don't need someone else to do that for me.
I mean, everyone's taking money off of the orders.
Right.
You know, everyone is. When I switched to my current agent, I had her, and I think everyone should do this. I basically had her audit my current suppliers.
Okay.
And just be like, get me quotes for products I already sell. And I think everyone should do that every couple of years just to keep everything honest and see what's going on. But she went in and she got me quotes and I went back and looked and I was like, for just one of my products, I was like, we're going to make an extra $10,000 a year just on this one product, and the discount wasn't even that much. But it was like just enough where it was like this compounds over selling in the US, selling in Europe. It definitely pays.
So you had a product you sourced through someone else, or you sourced on your own?
My previous sourcing agent. Yeah.
Okay. And then, so you had a different sourcing agent hit up the same factory and get a quote. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. That's definitely a good tip.
Different factories. Yeah.
Okay. Did you meet your agent like while you were in China, the one that you're currently working with?
I actually didn't. I wasn't actually with her on my last trip. I was with my previous agent still, but I knew of her and we had been talking, and I actually got her contact from someone else who's now in the group, but I'd known before either of us were in MDS. And he was telling me I should switch to her, and I like didn't want to. And then I was like, all right, fine, I'm ready for this. And then I did. And it was like, what have I been waiting for? This is so much better. And she's helped negotiate better terms and really helps on that end, and really push suppliers to make sure that orders are going through and making sure we're getting containers, which is now a thing too. That's a problem. So she's really done just so much for our business.
Nice. Yeah. I kind of ended up circling back to someone I met through MDS a couple years ago. And, you know, at first I'm one of those guys who it seemed too good to be true, right? Like somebody says, yeah, you should contact this person, and you contact them, and like it goes really well. And then I was like, man, well, maybe I can do better. You know, maybe I can do a little bit better.
Right, right.
I tried and we just had him do another product for us, and he beat the quote by like 70% or something.
Oh,
like,
wow,
something
yeah.
ridiculous that I had gotten quoted, and he beat it by a significant amount. And he also handles like all the logistics, you know, I can have everything shipped through him and photography done through him and all that.
Yeah, that's definitely helped a lot too, because sometimes if we have to send like a less than container, she'll be able to combine that with other clients she has and save us all a bunch of money.
Yeah, that is a huge deal right there. Absolutely. So we've kind of talked a little bit about MDS, you know, mentioned that we met some people in here and it's helped the business a little bit, but, what are like one or two things that stick out to you that, you know, MDS really provides value wise, or maybe even something specific that they've really helped you with?
So I would say number one, to me, running these kinds of businesses, especially ourselves, is a bit of like a solo endeavor that we've all undertaken, and it can be lonely, and it's hard to find people who are, you know, feeling your pain and doing what you're doing, at least for a while. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, I run the New York Amazon Seller Meetup Group, which is a free group that we run for people in New York to just meet up with other sellers. We get all kinds of sellers, big sellers, small sellers. We get great content. But it's just really that networking is really the main reason why I run it, because it really is a very like kind of solo endeavor. And joining MDS, and I knew a lot of people in MDS before I even joined, but joining it just makes it that like whenever you have people to talk to. I talk to people from MDS every single day, people who I met in MDS, who really are in the same shoes that I'm in, who have the same problems, the same issues, who are just, you know, really great people. But it really, the people in there really feel like they're like, we're all kind of one and the same. We're all kind of similar people in that regard. And it's really great to just meet people where I'm like, I found my people, and be able to talk to them and really commiserate with them and strategize and get ideas and things like that. Where before I was in MDS, it was a lot harder to do so. Every time I had a problem, it was just like me trying to solve it myself or contacting like the four people that I knew. Now, you know, I've got an archive of posts to dig through. I've got friends to contact, people who I know have issues, or they know people, or sometimes people know. It's really just made it so much easier to really run my business. And I guess even through the networking, I'll say the ability to kind of see preferred providers. There's a lot of people out there selling terrible services, I'll say.
Yeah.
And being able to trying to find someone to do a job and being able to search or talk to people and be like, okay, this guy's good. This is a good 3PL. This is a good, has saved just countless amount of hours and dollars and everything just to know that, like, even if I don't like them, they're at least on the short list of someone else. So I've already narrowed it down quite a bit past, like, just trying random people that I've found myself on the internet.
Yeah, I love the trust factor inside of MDS. It's like you get a recommendation from someone. Maybe you haven't even necessarily, like, actually spoken with them yet, but you see that they recommended somebody on a post, and it's almost like instantly you know that, hey, this person is going to, it's going to be a good shot at providing what I need, or
exactly,
you know, this plan of action that they use to beat a case is going to work for me and I'm going to try it out. Yeah, I love that trust factor inside of MDS. And it's like you can almost instantly connect with any of them, and you hop on a phone or hop on a Zoom call with them, and it's, it kind of feels like you know them already a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Or see them at any of the events.
Yeah, man. I'm, I know you're not able to make it, but I'm excited for the event coming up in Mexico. This month, but,
I'm really sad.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely miss you there, man. I know we got some more plans. So, you know, hopefully things will normalize here soon and we'll get back to meeting in person pretty regularly.
Yeah, for sure.
So what's on the horizon for your business, man? Are you working towards a sale? Like, are you just growing more and more and more? Like, what's the exit strategy?
Yeah, I'm like I said, I'm at a crossroads. So I'm kind of at a point where I'm deciding if I'm going to lead towards a sale or grow my team further or both. Because both are definitely possible. So I'm really kind of on the fence about all of that. And I'm kind of feeling out my options on all regards and seeing, you know, what I'd be worth on the open market and what it would be worth to keep going. So kind of in the middle. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, definitely wish you the best of luck with all that stuff. Thanks, man. I definitely look forward to seeing, you know, what route you go and how it works out for you. Before we sign off, what's one big piece of advice you would give to anyone that's listening to the podcast?
I guess my big piece of advice is really networking is probably the most important thing you can do for your business, in every regard. So, you know, I would really work hard on that, and because people have answers to problems you don't, you can help other people too. People, you know, like I said, people know who to contact for problems. Like, it's just joining MDS has really just accelerated our business so rapidly from those regards that I would never be in the position I'm in now if I was still doing this on my own.
Nice, man. Yeah, it's definitely a good piece of advice. It took me a while to figure that out. You know, I used to try and do everything myself, keep things to myself. But when you really open up to other people, like what is possible changes like exponentially when you start to include other people in your life and your business. And I've definitely seen that play out over time, man. It's been great to see that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on, Brandon. It was great chatting with you, man. Thanks for all the great information you shared about your Amazon business. I think there's a lot of good tips that you shared that people could take action on and really see some benefit from. If anybody wants to reach out to you, is there somewhere they can find you to talk a little more with you?
Sure. I can give out my email. I'm happy to give out my personal one. I don't care. Call me Brandon, CallMeBrandon at gmail.com. If anyone is in the New York area and wants to join our New York meetup group, it's free. I don't know when the next event will be, but just look for the New York Amazon Seller, Intermediate Advanced Amazon Sellers on Meetup. And the conference we run, AMZ Innovate, will hopefully be happening in the fall. So look for me there as well.
All right, Brandon. Well, thank you for your time. It was great chatting with you.
Yeah.
And I'll talk to you again soon, man. Thank you.
Sounds great. All right. Thank you.
Are you a million-dollar seller looking to network with like-minded entrepreneurs? Apply for membership now at milliondollarsellers.com. Leave us a review and subscribe now so you don't miss out on next week's episode.